M17, number 3B.
Open perhaps the textbook at page 1 with a scriptural note. And now we start and try to see what now the text is telling us. And we said the following thing now. It's not enough to read sentence by sentence. What is of interest is the structure of the subject of the text. What the text wants to bring out as structure, not as sentences. In order to bring out the structure of the whole chapter, naturally, Mrs. Eddy has to use a long text, many words, in order to symbolize with words the categories. Perhaps I have to put it the other way, still another way. But little by little you will see that we get into the rhythm of it. You remember we said God interprets itself through science as its own categories, as its own system. Principle, therefore, must be seen through those three categories. Those three categories are the capitalized terms. You are with me? That's the language of God. That's the language of spirit. The textbook shows that language of spirit in English. Therefore, the English language is only a symbol for the language of spirit. Therefore, we have to translate the English text into the language of spirit, of the capitalized terms. Because God does not know anything except himself. God does not know sin, disease, death. God does not know matter, no sense testimony, no people, no trees, nor I don't know what. Huh? Only knows himself. And we have seen that our consciousness must be remodeled to that stage where we also think only in capitalized terms. If we begin to think only from principle in the consciousness of the capitalized terms, then we think like God. That's then a divine consciousness. And all what we will see is the principle itself. So, when we take an English text, we must see that we can translate it into the categories of being, into the capitalized terms. And you say, why? Well, I can't tell you very clearly already now why. I can only indicate it because if we do that, and if we do it rightly, instead of wrongly, if we do it rightly, and translate it back to the capitalized term, we find out the order in which the text is written. If the text is written in an order of the seven, or of the four, of the other fours, then we get the true sense of it. We begin to understand really being. Because only if we find orders and laws do we begin to understand the principle of being. Do you see that? We said if we have 10,000 statements in the textbook, without seeing how they are related, how they are in an order, how they are in the laws. We have 10,000 statements isolated, and they never really give an understanding. If we would learn 10,000 additions and subtractions and so on, with only that, we would never have an understanding of arithmetic. We would only know certain isolated facts. And if we do not know the system of arithmetic, we cannot calculate something which we have not learned by heart. That's limited. That's why I say isolated fact goes so far, but not further. Yes? Sure. Yes? Okay. So, here we have a chapter with I don't know how many words in it. Hundreds and hundreds of words. About 4,000 words in it. And what shall we do with it? We want to see the simplicity of the structure so as to understand what prayer is. In order to do that, we have to retranslate the text into the simplicity of the capitalized terms. Let's do that with this scriptural note, just as the first example. And we will only learn by doing hundreds of examples this week. Text interpretation cannot be taught, I think, just by giving the theory of it. You know, it's so delicate, it's so new, it's so foreign to the human mind, because that's something you don't learn in school. Nobody here who sits here has learned in school text interpretation. I have the faintest idea, see. So it's a new subject, but an important subject. It's a subject that alone gives us understanding. All the rest only gives us knowledge. Knowledge of single statements, but not understanding. And the key term for Christian Science is understanding, not belief. Let's take that. It says, I read very slowly, and sometimes when I read this week at the text with you, I also want to show what's going on in my mind. What the kind of Überlegungen, what kind of reasoning I make. So as to acquaint you with the way how one reasons into categories instead of just talking about the meaning of a sentence or the significance of a sentence. So here it says, for verily I say unto you. What does it say? I wonder what it says here now. Must be something very important, because the biblical text here, the scriptural note, at the beginning of the chapter always gives the key tone of the chapter, in one way or the other. That's what the use is of a scriptural note. And it says, that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, so I see, so the first movement is, whosoever shall say unto this mountain. It's like a command. Huh? This mountain, be removed, and be thou cast into the sea. So I see the very first thing is that there is a command, that there is the best thing I think is a command that is spelled out. What kind of command is this? And so it goes on and says, and shall not doubt in his heart. Can you see that this is again another aspect? First there is that command, but that's not enough. Jesus said, that's not enough, and just to say, and just to wish, and just to desire that that mountain be cast into the sea, that's not enough. There must be added to it. He should not doubt in his heart, shall believe that those things which he says shall come to pass. Can you see there are two elements there? Two elements, very different elements there. The one is the command or the desire or the wish or the thing that says to that mountain, be removed. And it doesn't remove. So something more must be added to it. It says, when you say that, you should not doubt it, you should believe it, you should be firm in it. Can you see it? Yes? You should be firm in it, or else it doesn't work. So the first movement doesn't work without the second. Yes? He shall have whatsoever he says. Can you see? It becomes definite. He shall have it. So there is a third factor coming in. Once again, first is that desire or that will or that command, but that's not enough. You have a second attitude, namely you shall believe in it, you shall not doubt, you shall be firm in it. And third, then something is going to happen. Then becomes definite. So you have three movements in it. It goes on and says, therefore I say unto you. And he repeats it in other terms. Repeats the same thing in other terms. He says, what things soever ye desire when ye pray. Can you see? It's again the first movement. The desire, the wish, when you pray. The second movement, believe that ye receive them. The New English Bible says much better, says believe that you have received it. See? So again you have first the desire and says that's not enough. You need a second one or it doesn't work. You have to believe it. Well, as I said before, no doubt. Believe it, be firm in it. And ye shall have them. Again, the third. It becomes definite. Yes? Now, so we have a text here from Jesus that goes twice through the same order, through the same three factors. He does what we usually do when we teach something, we say it, and then we say it again in a bit different words, and then usually we say it again a third time, and again in different words, but in the same tonality, just to help to understand what we say. So here we have this. Now, what can we do with that? We said these are texts, but scientific text interpretation, not just interpretation, not text interpretation, but scientific text interpretation means that the text must be translated into scientific categories. What categories does Jesus tap here? You see it very easily when you know the tonality of the synonyms. When we know the tonality of the synonyms, we know that mind expresses itself, translates itself to the human as a true desire. I don't know if we have it on that chart. Sue, do we have it on the chart? Column 6, also have had Sue's class, know that very well now. That mind translated to our human attitude is searching, seeking, desiring. So what Jesus said is, well, if you have the attitude of mind within you, desire, then we know believe and have no doubt, but shall believe, and believe here is really understanding, because in the Bible they use belief and faith as understanding. We know what? We know that understanding is what? Spirit. So it is a translated form of spirit right down to the human attitude, which says, well, you have to be firm in it, the firmament of the second day, the firmament of spirit, the understanding of spirit. You have to be firm. And then we have the third movement, and ye shall have them. It becomes definite. And we know that soul. That soul translates itself to the human and makes it definite, unchangeable. Can you see what is implied here? We can take that long paragraph and can say what actually Jesus wanted to say: if you have the attitude of mind and of spirit and of soul, then that is true prayer. That's answer prayer. You have it. So instead of having all that long sentences, we can see that if within our consciousness we have the tonality of mind, spirit, and soul, the tonality of it within us, then it prays within us. And it prays rightly within us. So that whole attitude which we carry around all year round within ourselves, without folding hands and without going down to the knees and without taking a certain time in the day where we do our prayers, when something within us is there which says, well, mind, you know, God, mind is always present within me as true desire, and is always present with me as spirit, as a firmness of it, is always present within me as soul, as something which is unshakably so, then that is scientific praying. So prayer isn't something that happens some time a day or so. It's an inward attitude. You can say, well, what have you gained by that? Just having other terms. All right, I can say that's not the point. The point in it is that it makes me realize something very big. Namely, it makes me realize, first of all, that I cannot be satisfied just with mind, just with desire. That in order that desire really can come to fruition, I need spirit. I need the firmness of it, the no doubting, the understanding of it, the true faith in it, the absolute faith in it. And only then can I see that the third matures, that it will be mine, that will be an unchangeable prayer, an unrevocable prayer, and that is answer prayer. So that alone the order of mind, spirit, soul already shows at least there must be that what you say when you have three tones in one triad. You just must have that triad of mind, spirit, soul within you, or it doesn't pray. Now the point is that mind, spirit, soul as such is a million times bigger than the terms Jesus used. Jesus just used a few qualities of mind translated to the point of human attitude, namely desire. Just one point of spirit translated to the human. Be firm, not doubt. Can you see that? He picks out only one or two qualities. But naturally, if we have the whole tone of mind, spirit, soul. It includes much more qualities of the same kind than is spelled out here. If I see that I have to have a desire, well, that means also that I have an inward openness of mind, the inward expectancy of mind. It's not just desire. All those qualities of mind that translate themselves to the human are really brought into action within me. Mind translates itself to me that it says, turn to God. Seek God. Not just desire. Seek God. Have an open thought for it. And so the volume, so to say, of desire becomes much bigger. Well, Jesus couldn't say that all, or he would have had to write the whole book just on the one prayer. But we, in this age, we have that possibility to see. Just let me make a side remark. You see, we see that if we touch an idea of mind, we touch more than an idea of mind. We touch the infinite mind. Because an idea can never be separated from its synonymous term. You can never separate intelligence from mind. So if we touch intelligence, we touch mind. And mind is bigger than just intelligence. Are you aware of what I say? Yes. You know, this is so important. You see, this is what we said last year. This is the 7,000-year period. That in the 7,000-year period, see, we only think in terms of the capitalized terms and no more in ideas of the capitalized terms. We come out from the sixth 6,000 year period where we have learned the system of Christian Science through the ideas of the capitalized terms, studying the ideas of mind, the ideas of spirit, the ideas of the world, the ideas of science, absolute Christian Science, and so on. We have learned that. But we come now out, and it's quite clear that Apocalypse has shown that beautifully last year, that we come out of that period into the period of the 7,000-year period, where only in capitalized terms has that an advantage. Yes, a terrific advantage, because a capitalized term is infinite, whereas a single quality of mind is a single quality of mind. So if we touch an idea, we touch also the infinite one. If we touch the power of an idea, we touch not the power just of a idea, we touch the power of the infinite mind. If we touch really the intelligence of an idea, we touch actually the intelligence of the infinite one. Can you see how this takes off all the limits? That makes it a million times bigger. And therefore, if we translate what Mrs. Eddy has written down, they are ideas, because that's the only way she can write. She couldn't write the textbook and say, look here, people, I have seen something wonderful. I have seen that God is the infinite one, and that infinite one is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and it operates as Word, Christ, Christianity, and science, and this operates on every level of science, on the level of science itself, on the level of divine science, of absolute Christianity and Christian science, and she has said everything. She could close the book. You see, that's the whole of Christian science. It's the whole system of Christian science. So it would have taken her half a page. Could have sold it for 2 cents or so. and say, here you have it. There is no more to it. She knew it was too early. And so she had to break the bread. She had to break it up and say, what is mind? And explain what mind is. What is the word? And had to explain what the word is. What is Christian Science? And she had to explain what Christian Science is. And so it gave 600 pages. But what we have to do is that we are not worshipping words. We are worshipping principle. The capitalized terms. This is the only being there is. Words like if and when and all, they are not realities. They are grammar helping to understand what the capitalized terms are. Therefore, our job is really, you see, to do the next step after we have done the analysis of the capitalized terms, what they are in ideas. Now we have to do the synthesis of it and say, after all, everything is a question of those capitalized terms. And if we have the tonality of them in our consciousness, we don't need all these terms, all these words. The ifs and the whens and the so and what is here, huh? For and speak and from and on and or and they are not realities. They are symbols that try to indicate what the language of spirit is. And the language of spirit is the tonality of those capitalized terms. Yes. Okay, so you see what we try to do. That we take that text and translate it here into mind, spirit, soul, and see that they must be a triad, that only mind alone wouldn't do the trick, that mind and spirit alone wouldn't do the trick, that it needs mind, spirit, and soul. And that's what John Dolley has seen ages ago, that mind, spirit, soul is the cornerstone, so to say, of the whole system, namely the word as the word. And you know the matrix of John Dolley, then it's mind, spirit, soul, the word as the word. And here it is again, in the first of the 16th chapter of the matrix of the textbook, again, mind, spirit, soul. Okay.